All right, Rabbi Say, good morning. Let's begin. So we're starting today. Today's daf is Tzadik Gimel. We are picking up from the top of Tzadik Gimel. I want to thank Yehuda for giving this shir yesterday and for Mamish covering a good amount of ground. So we'll say, let's begin. So remember, we're in the sugya concerning the circumstances where you have sacrificial blood that splatters or that spurts on something else. What is the status, ultimately, again, of the garment or of the item upon which, ultimately, again, the blood is spurted? So let's begin. Tzadikim al Amud Aleph, Mamish, the top of the page. Boiminate Roi Bar Chama Rav Chista. So Roi Bar Chama asked the following kasha of Rav Chista. Nitas al beget tame mahu. What's the halacha if you have sacrificial blood which goes ahead and spurts on a beged that is already tame? So remember again, the paradigmatic case is where you have sacrificial blood that goes ahead and comes on a regular beged. So we saw the din in the Mishnah. The second case is if you have blood that is tame or blood that is pasul that goes ahead and splatters on an article of clothing. So the Mishnah paskind that article of clothing does not require kibus. Does not require any kind of laundering. The shayla over here is, I have sacrificial blood, which is ro'i, which is fit, that splatters on a beged that is tameh. What happens once it comes onto the beged that is tameh? Ultimately, again, the blood itself becomes tameh. But in this case over here, so now it turns out that you have tameh blood that comes on a garment, but the blood was not tameh initially. The blood was fine. So the shayla is, does that require... Does that require ultimately again? Does that require the beged to have kibus or not? If you look at the top Rashi says nitaz al beged tamei v'nitma b'nigiyasa bo. The sacrificial blood becomes tamei as a result of its contact with the beged, which is tamei. Mi havei dam pasul kila nitma kol dim lachin v'lo boi kibus. So do we treat this sacrificial blood as if it was already tamei, and therefore when it comes in contact with the garment does not require any type of kibus? So the Gemara says o dilma. Or do we say no, that at the time ultimately again that the blood initially came in contact with the beged, the blood itself is tahar, and therefore again this beged will require kibos. So we'll say that is the fundamental shayla we are dealing with. So Rav Huna Rav Yeshua says the fact that you're asking this particular question, Shmamino. We could see from here that what? Haisa la shas hakosha v'nifsala ein dama ta'un kibus. So we see from here that if you had sacrificial blood that was initially fit, and then it subsequently became unfit, and then after it becomes unfit, ultimately again, it goes ahead and comes in contact with a beged, so the beged does not require kibus. But hanimili b'zeh achar zeh. Rabbi will say, that case is where I have sacrificial blood that was fit, then subsequently becomes unfit, i.e. pasul, then comes in contact with a beged. We've already established that that beged does not require kibus. Ababas achas lo, odilma loshna. So we'll say, so again, we're just simply restating the question. So our fundamental question is as follows. Here's what we know. I know that if I have sacrificial blood that is kosher, that is totally fit, and it spurts, or it spurts is the wrong word, spritzes, right? That's that was the technical term I was looking for, right? It spritzes on the beged, that the beged requires kibos. That we know. We also know is that if I have sacrificial blood which is unfit, which is pasul, and it spritzes on the beged, that the beged doesn't require kibos. I also know that if the blood was fit, then became unfit, became pasul, and spritzed on the beged. The beged doesn't require kibus. What's the fundamental shayla we're trying to clarify? What are we trying to answer? What if I have sacrificial blood, which is fit? It's fine, it's kosher. The problem is the beged itself is tamei. So when that blood touches the beged, the blood becomes unfit pasul. But the blood wasn't unfit initially. It only becomes unfit as a result of its contact with the beged. So the shayla is, does such a beged require kibus or not? So the Gemara says, So the truth is, he said, in reality, the answer to this question is rooted in a fundamental dispute between Rabbi Elazar and the Rabbanon. Aliba de Rabba, in accordance with something, it's a machlokes of Rabbi Elazar and the Rabbanon, in accordance with the interpretation of Rabba, ukidikometaris Abaye. And as Abaye ultimately inserts his own understanding of this machlokes. Here we go. This is Sanya. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Rabbi Elazar, it's actually a fascinating case. Rabbi Elazar Omer, We'll say this is amazing. Let's say you have, remember again, Mechatos is Paraduma waters. Let's say you have Paraduma waters that ultimately again became Tame. However, they became Tame. So Rabbi Elazar Paskins that even if they become Tame, Mitarin, Rashi says over here, the second short line in Rashi, Mitarin, Esa Adam Mitumas Meski Lo Nitma. We'll say this is amazing. If you have Paraduma waters which became Tame, you can still use them to go to be Mitar someone. Where do you get that from? So Rabbi Elazar says, Sharinida. Mazin Allah. We'll say this is amazing. Because the halacha is that you can sprinkle the waters of the Paraduma on a Nida. Now we'll say, now what does this mean? Let's say a woman is a Nida, but she also contracted Tumas Meis. So the halacha is, we do not say that she has to first go to the mikvah to remedy her Nida status before she can become Tor through the Ifra of the Paraduma. Instead, we sprinkle on her even when she's a Nida. And in fact, one Tvila can go ahead and take care of both. One tefillah could take care of her nida status as well as her tumas meis status at the same time. Now, what Rabbi Elazar is pointing out is as follows. What happens effectively when you sprinkle the waters of a paraduma on a nida? What effectively happens? What happens to that water? Effectively, it becomes tame. Yet, what do you see? It still works to be metahar her from her tumas meis. What do you see from here? That Rabbi Elazar says, you see from here, if me chatos, if paraduma waters could work on a nida, what that tells me is that even if paraduma water becomes tame, it still has the ability and the capacity to be metahar. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Shari nida shenitma b'meis mazer alel lefnei tvilas nidasa v'tavelis l'shtei atumos b'tvila achos shel matzina b'torah shuskekal litpol nidasa tchila v'lekabel hazav v'tarek yishetitbo v'yesh mikan raya l'meichato shenitmu kodem hazav asak l'fersh rabbeuz. It's so amazing. So you see over here that what? You see over here that you can sprinkle waters of Paraduma on a Nida. And we don't require her first to become Tar from her Nida status. Even though, when you sprinkle those waters on the Nida, what's the status of the water? I won't say it becomes Tame, because it's coming in contact with a woman who is a Nida. But nevertheless, it works. From here again, Rabbi Elazar says that even if Paraduma waters become Tame, they still have the ability to be Matarva. Amar Rabba, Rabbi Elazar b'shitas Rabbi Akiva Rabbo Amra. And Rabbi says that Rabbi Elazar Shita is really rooted in the Shita of Rabbi Akiva, his Rebbe. Da'amar ha'avat. Remember again, you know, Rabbi Elazar was the Talmid of Rabbi Akiva, but not just the Talmid. Rabbi Elazar was one of the second kadra of Talmidim. After Rabbi Akiva lost the 24,000 Talmidim, remember he went halach etzel Rabbi Sinu Shabedarom v'hem heim hamidu tor Rabbi Shah. He finds a group of new Talmidim. Rabbi Elazar is one of those new Talmidim. So Rabbi Elazar's shita is rooted in Rabbi Akiva. Do amar ha'avaras kli agabi makom tami kimunotim. Rabbi said this is rivetingly amazing. Rabbi Akiva has an incredible shita. Ha'avaras kli agabi makom tami kimunach tami. That if you go ahead and you take a kli and you pass that kli over a makom tame, it's as if that kli has come to rest. It's as if that kli. So, also, you understand what this is saying over here? That if you pass a kli that let's say whose contents, we're going to see the case over in just a moment, a kli whose contents are tahor, or the kli itself is tar, but you pass it over a makom tame, it's as if that kli has come to rest. This nun. Here we go. We'll say first white line. Sadikim lamad aleph. Hayu omid chutz letanor v'sheretz betanor. So we'll say here's the case. There's an oven, and there is a sheretz in the oven. So therefore, again, we'll say we assume the oven itself is going to be, usually it's a kli cheres of sorts. There's a sheretz in the oven. So now again, the tanor is tame. Tanor is tame. Now what happens? So if you could imagine for just a moment. So just we're in a home. There's the oven. So I'm standing on one side of the oven. On the other side of the oven is a window with a windowsill. On that windowsill happens to be my Paraduma waters. So what am I going to do? Now watch this. So Hayo Omid Chutz Latanor. I'm standing on the other side, meaning opposite, on the other side of the Tanor. V'sharetz betanor. V'hoshit yado l'chalon. I extend my hand to the windowsill. V'notel es halagin. And I go ahead and I take the jug of water. Now again, it's not just any water, it's paraduma water. V'heviru al pi tanur. Now listen, now what happens? I now take that jug and I bring it across the airspace of what? Of what? Of the oven. So now this jug of paraduma water passed over the oven which contains the sheretz. Rabbi Akiva mitame, v'chachamim mitarin. Rabbi Akiva says, I'm sorry, the water is tame, and the chachamim say it is tahor. So the Gemara says, Rashi says, "Uvenatal asalogin shalmechatos umesechas paratanilei umal lehila mechatos." So listen to this. Ubaha pligi. We'll say, what's the nekudas amachlokis? The Rabbi Akiva savar kimunach tami. Rabbi Akiva says, when something goes through the airspace of another item, it's as if it has come to rest, and therefore we view the water of the paraduma as if it actually came to rest on top of the oven which houses the sheretz. V'rabbanon savri lav kimunach tami. The Rabbanon say no. When something passes through the airspace of something, it is not as if it comes to rest. Ve'eis ve'abaye. And Abaye raises a kasha on this. And he says, one second. Mod Rabbi Akiva, b'hazo, shevira al-gabe al-kli cheres, tamei, al-gabe mishkav u-moshav tamei, shehi tohora. Yet Abaye also raises the following issue, which is that what? Rabbi Akiva goes ahead and agrees that when there is a hazar, let's say, for example, again, the Kohen is sprinkling the waters of the Paraduma. Or for that, right, let's assume it's that case, sprinkling the waters of the Paraduma. And the sprinkling of both, the droplets pass over a Kli Cheres that is Tameh, or Mishkav Moshav that is Tameh, or in other words, any Tameh item. Rabbi Akiva holds that what? That the Hazah is still Kasha. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Mod Rabbi Akiva, Afa pi shenechlak bilogin shamechatos, modahu baza shevira, shayamaza ala adam tanner tame mafriko v'avra haza piatan. So listen to this. Sabai says, one second. You just told me that Rabbi Akiva holds that when an item goes through the airspace of another item, it's kimunach tami. So therefore, when I bring the jug of the paraduma waters over the tanur, which houses the sheretz, it's as if what? It's as if what? We'll say it's as if what? That the jug of the paraduma is what? Is at rest on the tanner and therefore disqualified. Yet Abaye says, Rabbi Akiva holds that if the Kohen does the azad, does the sprinkling of the waters of the paraduma, and it passes over, this is the sprinkling itself, the droplets themselves pass over a tamei item, Rabbi Akiva holds that it's tar. She'in lecha davar, shemetamei lemala kilemata, because they both say there is nothing essentially that is metamei, ultimately again through airspace, lemala lemata, ela kizayis minameis, Ushar kol ha-ma'ahilin, except for a kezayis of a corpse, or for that matter, other items that are metame b'kutumas ohel. La'asuye, what does this come to include? Evan ha-minugas. We'll say one of the other items that conveys tuma via ohel is obviously mace, the corpse, but the other item is an evan minugas, ultimately, again, a stone that is afflicted with tzaraas. El-amarabai, so we'll say, so what's going on over here? So what's the sheet of Rabbi Akiva? So on one hand, again, you're telling me that according to Rabbi Akiva, if you take the flask of paraduma water and you pass it over the oven that has the sheretz, so the water is tameh. But yet you also just told me that if the Kohen sprinkles the water of the paraduma and it passes over an item that is tameh, that the water remains tar. So which one is it? Therefore, Abaye interprets the machlokis this way. The truth is, everyone agrees that when you pass something through the airspace of something else, it is not as if the item has come to rest. So what's the machlokis over here? V'hacha b'hacha miflegi. The Rabbi Akiva savar gazvinan shemayanuach. The reason Rabbi Akiva says that when you bring the waters of the para aduma over the oven which contains the sheretz, that the waters will become tamei is why? It's a gzera. What's the gzera? What are we concerned about? I will say that you may come to what? That you may come to rest the flask on the oven itself. Now, when you come to rest the flask on the oven itself, that could be problematic. So it's a gzera. Everyone agrees that when you pass something through the airspace of another item, it is not as if it has come to rest. Rabbi Akiva's goes there were concerned that if we let you pass it over the oven, you may come to rest it on the oven. V'rabbanon savri lo gazvinon. The Rabbanon are not, they're not worried about this. They don't make this gzera. They're not concerned that someone's going to rest the flask of the para aduma waters ultimately on the tamei oven. Umod Rabbi Akiva, but Rabbi Akiva will agree that there is no gezira bosei, in which case, in the case of Hazah, kevan de nafek nafak. See, Rabbi Akiva, even Rabbi Akiva who holds that in the case of the flask of the para aduma waters, that if you pass it over the oven, so the para aduma waters will become tamei. Why? What is he concerned? One more time, what is he concerned about? That you're going to what? That you're going to rest it. But Rabbi Akiva will say that only applies to a case where you have your hand on the jug the entire time, so you could choose to put it down at your own will. But in the case of Hazah, where the kohen has already done the sprinkling of Osai. So if the sprinkling passes over a tummy item, even Rabbi Akiva agrees that the waters will remain tar. Why? Why? There's no gzera. Why is there no gzera? Because you can't put it down. Because once you do the hazah, you've effectively lost any ability to control the droplets, and therefore, again, there's no gzera that you may come to put it down anywhere else. Once you do the sprinkling, ultimately, again, it's out of your control. So the Gemara is given the nafik. We'll say an incredible musr in that also, that there are certain dynamics in life that you could control, certain dynamics in life that once you unleash them, ultimately, again, you lose control of them. An incredible, incredible yisod. Certain things that you hold on to the jug the entire time. I mentioned the Perek Yavashir. So Dibur is one of these speeches that Rabbi Huda Chassid said. He said that before I speak, I control my words. Once I speak, my words control me. It's Rabbi Huda Chassid. You know, before you speak, mamish is like you have your hand on the flask. You could choose them. But once you go ahead and you sprinkle it, keep under nothing. Rabbi Lozzi Rabbanan Makim Mifligis. We'll say, let's go back. What are Rabbi Lozzi Rabbanan arguing about? Samar Abaye, Bidonin Tuma Kiduma, Mituma Sheba Osa Shaka Mifligis. So we'll say, the Machlokis Rabbi Lozzi Rabbanan is in what? Is we'll say, remember again, do we learn out? Bidonin Tuma Kiduma. We'll say, Tuma Kiduma means pre-existing Tuma. From tumah that ultimately occurs in that moment. Rabbi said, what's the example of tumah? So tumah kiduma, we know pre-existing tumah. Pre-existing tumah means the status of tumah that already existed. Tumah shaba osa shabos refers to the case that we're actually focusing on, which is in this case, for example, where the sacrificial blood, which is totally fit, ultimately falls onto a beged, which is tameh. In which case, again, the blood becomes tameh, but not as a result of any pre-existing condition, as a result of its current contact with the beged, which is tameh. So Mar Savar Dunin, one opinion holds that we can learn out one case from the other. Umar Savar Ain Dunin. Rava says, no, the Chuli Alma Ain Dunin. It's not true. We actually don't learn out Tuma Shaba Osa Shah from Tuma Kiduma. Vacha Balkamif. The Yerba say, here's what they're arguing about. Rabbi Lazar Savar Hazot Tzvi Chashir, Umitstarfin Lazos. Rabbi Lazar holds, Rabbi say that Hazot, we actually saw this Machlokis earlier, that Hazot requires a Shir. And different Hazos, multiple sprinklings, can combine with one another to go ahead and form the shir. But Rabbanan Savri in Tzricha Shir, the Rabbanan on the other hand hold that Halacha Lameisa, the Hazos do not require shir. We'll say, take a look at Rashi just a moment. For Rabbanan Savri, it's in the wide lines, about 7 lines up from the bottom. For Rabbanan Savri in Hazo Tzarek Shir, Ume Hazo Kamaisa Istakila Hazo. Therefore again, from the first Hazo, ultimately again, So again, the Gemara is giving. Gemara now is telling us that the machlokes in Rabbi Lazan the Rabbanon ultimately again is in the din of whether or not does hazar require a shear, and ultimately again mitstarif in lazos. Rabbanon hold that it doesn't require a shear, and ultimately it's not mitstarif. Rabbi Lazan holds hazar does require a shear. And it is mitzdarif. We'll say, bottom line, what is the halacha lemaisa? Just remember again, we started with a simple question. What was our simple question? I have sacrificial blood, which is tahor. Now it spurts onto a beged, which is tameh. I have a simple question. What's my question? All right, excellent. Right, my simple question, which rather is not so simple. Right, my simple question is, does the beged require kibus or not? That's what we're all about over here. Right, does the beged require kibus? So remember, what are the cases I know? I know that if tahar blood spurts on a tahar beged, the beged requires kibus. I know that. I know that if disqualified sacrificial blood spurts on a beged, so ultimately again, the beged doesn't require kibus. This is the anomaly case. The blood in this case is fine, is kosher. It's the beged which is tameh. But again, what's the wrinkle in this? The wrinkle in this is that when tahar blood ultimately goes ahead and spurts on a tameh beged, what happens to the blood? The blood becomes tameh. What we call, what the Gemara now called, tumah sheba osa shah. So what do we do? So we'll say, what's the halacha? So the Rambam Paskins, this is in Hilchos Masya Karbanos, Perek Ches, halacha tes. So the Rambam Paskins as follows. Nitas al beged tameh, eno taun kibus. We'll say, the Rambam Paskins, the halacha lemaisa, ultimately, again, if the blood only becomes tameh as a result of contact with the beged, there is no din of kibus in that particular circumstance. Therefore, halacha lemaisa, again, nitaz al beg yatame, if the blood spurts, if the tahar blood, this is kosher sacrificial blood, which spurts on a beged which is tame, ain't no taun kibus, the beged does not require any type of laundry. Good, let's go back to chatas psula. But as I remember again, the Mishnah then told me that if it's the blood of a chatas psula that ultimately spurted on the beged, then the halacha is that the beged does not require kibus. Where do we learn this? From Tan Rabbanan, midama. So we'll say the fact that the pasuk says midama, the way the Gemara is interpreting this is from some of its blood. Namely, that there are some types of blood which will require kibus and some types of blood which will not require kibus. Midam kshera v'lo midam psula. So the drasha over here is midama. It is only if it's kosher sacrificial blood that ultimately renders the beged fit for kibus. But if the blood is possible, ultimately the beged will not require kibus. So listen to this case. Haisalah shas hakosher v'nifsalah. But say, what about in the following situation where the blood had a shas hakosher? The blood was fit at one point in time. It was kosher, but then it becomes possible. So Rabbi says, now, what's the impact of that blood if it spritzes on the beged? Will the beged require kibus or not? So the Gemara says, Haisal shasa kosher v'nifsala, ein dama ta'un kibus. Still, nevertheless, the Gemara says, the Rabbanan say, that the beged does not require kibus. Rabbi Shimon Omer, echad zeh ve'echad zeh, ein ta'un kibus. So ultimately, again, the Gemara says, that Rabbi Shimon says, in all cases, ultimately, again, whether it had a shasa kosher, didn't have a shasa kosher, there's not going to be any kind of kibbutz necessary. My time with Rabbi Shimon, what's Rabbi Shimon's logic? Ksiv osa, uksiv midama. But say, ultimately, again, we have two exclusionary phrases. So again, lehecha dahaisalo shasa kosher. So midama teaches me ksher na psula, and osa, Rabbi Shimon will say, teaches me dahaisalo shasa kosher, that even if the blood once upon a time had a time when it was permitted, ultimately, again, but now it subsequently became unfit, it will not go ahead and make the beged require kibbutz. Rabbi Akiva, osa prat l'truma. So Rabbi Akiva will say that osa ultimately, again, comes to exclude truma. Now, what does he mean, truma? What are we talking about over here? If you look at Rashi, Rabbi Akiva, five lines up from the bottom in Rashi, osa prat l'truma, v'amarika ushtifakai. Switching gears here just a little bit. This is a marika and shtifa. Rabbi Akiva, marika and shtifa refers to the cleansing process that a kli must undergo after used for sacrificial purposes. So Rabbi Akiva comes along and says that the din of Mrika and Shtifa is only a din by Karbanos, does not apply to Truma. We're going to see this later on, that if you use a kli or a kohen uses a kli for Truma, ultimately, again, there is no din for Marika and Shtifa. So that's what Rabbi Akiva uses the pasuk of Osaf, or the word of Osaf. Rabbi Shimon Latamei Damar Kachim Kalmein Tunin Marika Shtifa Koshkin Shuma. Well, so Rabbi Shimon doesn't require this limud. Why not? Because Rabbi Shimon is already of the opinion that it's only Kachshei Kadashim which require Marika and Shtifa. Kachim Kalem do not require, in other words, it's only higher sanctity karbanos that require a washing and a cleansing of their utensils. Lower sanctity karbanos, like Kachim Kalem, do not require Merik and Shtifa. And if Kachim Kalem don't require Merik and Shtifa, all the more so what? Truma is not going to require Merik and Shtifa as well. So both say, so halacha lemaisa. So again, we seem to see, interestingly enough, an interesting machlokes here about what happens if you had blood which had a shas hakosher, subsequently became tamei. Does contact with a beged require the beged to have kibus? Shabbos says, how do we paskin? So the Rambam, again, this is also in Hilchos Maaseh Karbanos, Pereches Halacha Gimel, says as follows. Chatos shenifsala in dama taun kibus. Shabbos says, if you have sacrificial blood, so if that became tamei, then that blood subsequently spritzed on a beged, so that beged does not require kibus. That's just, everybody agrees with that. We'll say that if again you have a chadash and ifsala, what about bein shahaisala shas hakosher, bein shalo haisala shas hakosher? So we'll say the Rambam paskins ultimately again, whether at some point in time this sacrificial blood was fit for use, or whether it was never fit for use, ultimately, again, if the blood is currently tame, or the blood is possible, I should say, not tame, the blood is possible, it will not generate a kibbutz obligation for the beged. The Rambam goes on, he says, Ezu shaisla shasa kosher, what's an example, ultimately, again, of, let's say, blood that at some point in time had a permitted window, shalana v'shenitmeis v'shiyatza chutz la'azar. So let's say the carbon was totally valid, but then you left it overnight, or you took it outside of the Beis HaMikdash, or it became tameh. Ve'ezo hi shelo ha'isela shasa kosher. What's an example of sacrificial blood which never had a permitted window? Shenifsela b'shchito b'zvigas dam, where the carbon itself became invalidated already in the beginning of the sacrificial process, like by shchita or by the sprinkling of the blood. So the way that I'm on Paskins is, at the end of the day, if the blood is currently pasul, the sacrificial blood is currently unfit, whether it once upon a time was fit and then became unfit, or it was never fit, if it's currently unfit and it comes in contact with the beged, then what's the halacha? The beged does not require kibbutz. So bottom line, we emerge from, close out this sugya with two important pieces of halacha lameisa. Number one, if you have sacrificial blood, which is tar, kosher, which is sprinkled on a beged tamei, ultimately, again, eino ta'un kibbutz. The beged does not require any kind of laundering. That's halacha lameisa one. And halacha lameisa two, when it comes to unfit sacrificial blood, we don't care whether it was fit and became unfit, or was unfit from the beginning. Either way, if that blood is currently unfit at the time it comes in contact with the beged will not require kibbutz. Good. Weiter, says the Mishnah. Nitas minat savra ala beged, ein ta'un kibbutz. We're also listening to this. Another very interesting halacha. So let's say now I have blood from the neck of the animal. Blood from the neck of the animal, which spurted on the beged, ein ta'un kibbutz. We're going to see the beged does not require laundering. Mina keren u mina yisod. Similarly, Rav Osai, if you have blood from the corner of the mizbeach. So Rav Osai, can you imagine for just a moment, the kohen is sprinkling the blood. Let's see, when he sprinkles the blood bounces off, backsplash, right? It bounces off the keren, back onto the kohen's beged. Or mina yisod. The same thing again, he's pouring the blood on the base of the mizbeach, and it splashes back. Eino ta'un kibbutz. Rav Osai, ultimately, again, in all of these cases, even though the kohen has kosher sacrificial blood on his clothing, it is not going to require kibbutz. Nishpach ala ritzba va'asvo. Similarly, again, we'll say, if let's say the blood spilled on the floor, we'll say this time in a case, let's say the kohen has the blood in the kli, he trips, the blood spills on the floor. Remember, we'll say, we paskin, the Rambam paskins, that halacha lemaisa, if you're taking the blood to do zrika and you trip and it spills on the floor, the kohen has the right to go ahead and gather that back up and put it back in the kli. Let's say again, that blood that on the floor, from the floor, splattered on his clothing. Va'asva ein ta'un kibbutz, does not require laundering. Ve'ein ta'un kibbutz, so we'll say why? Now the Mishnah says the principle. Ein ta'un kibbutz, because the only time that an article of clothing requires kibbutz is when? El adam shenis kabel b'kli v'ray lazo. Only when the blood is in a utensil and it is fit for sprinkling. So we'll say now you go back and you understand all the previous cases. So if the blood is spurting out of the neck of the kohen, sorry, chas v'shalom, not on the neck of the kohen, right? Sorry, bad slip. Right, out of the neck of the carbon, and ultimately, again, it gets on his clothing, so we'll say it doesn't satisfy the criteria. The only type of sacrificial blood which will go ahead and require kibbutz is when that blood is in a kli, and ro'i lahazo. If it does not satisfy that criteria, ultimately again, it doesn't require kibbutz. Now, remember again, testing your knowledge a little bit. So what will you do with the article of clothing?
Can you tear up?
So remember again, we've already established that halacha l'maisa, again, remember we don't actively launder for cleansing purposes. So you'll tear it up and you'll ultimately use it. Now again, for sacrificial blood, if it requires kibbutz, you could do it. But if it doesn't require kibbutz, interestingly enough, such a garment ultimately, again, will be used for the wicks. Okay. Tan Rabbanan. Yochel nitas minat savra la begi yei ta'un kibbutz. So say, I might have thought that ultimately if the blood spurts from the neck of the animal onto the clothing of the kohen, that it will require laundering. Tamud lomar asher yazeh. La amart ilocha ela baray la'azah. Therefore, what the pasuk says, that which you will sprinkle, only blood which is fit for azah, which is fit for sprinkling, ultimately renders or creates an obligation for kibbutz. Tanya idach, we have another brayso. Yochol nitas min hakeren miyasod yehi ta'un kibbutz. I might have thought that ultimately, again, if it backsplashed from the corner of the mizbeach or from the base, that it should require kibbutz. Tamud lomar asher yazeh prat lezeh shekvar huza. But say, therefore, it comes to exclude what? Blood which has already been sprinkled. So if it's already been sprinkled and now it's splashing back, ultimately, again, there's no din of kibbutz. Nishpach ala ritzpah. So again, remember, if the blood went ahead and was poured on the floor, ultimately, again, it doesn't require a din of kibbutz. Hasu lamali, to which the Gemara said, I don't understand. Meaning, what the Gemara is now asking is, why do you need all of these cases in the Mishnah? I got it. In other words, only blood in a kli ultimately will go ahead and blood that's in a kli and fit for azah will generate an obligation of kibbutz. So I don't need the case over the blood spilled on the floor. To which the Gemara says, "Ma tam kamar." In other words, we'll say this is actually an explanation of the principle. Ma tam nishbach al ritzba va'asfu ein tam kibbutz. What the Mishnah means to say is as follows: why is it that if blood spills on the floor and the kohen regathers it, and some of that blood ultimately gets on his clothing, that it doesn't require kibbutz. Lefi she'in ton kibbutz el adam shenes kabel b'kli v'roi lazia. So ultimately, again, essentially that last part of dam al ritzba, I will say, is attached to the explanatory concept at the end of the Mishnah. Why is it that if the kohen gets his clothing soiled with blood that is on the floor, that ultimately, again, it does not require kibbutz? Because only when the blood is gathered in a kli and fit for sprinkling, does it create an obligation for kibbutz of the article of clothing. Roi laza. So remember again, in order for the blood to generate the kibbutz obligation, it has to be fit for sprinkling. Lini utei mai. So we'll say, what kind of blood is this coming to exclude? Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nehiyeh bidvaro. Well, it's actually quite amazing. Where does this come to exclude? Lemeute kibo pachos mikadei hazia beklizah. Upachos mikadei hazia beklizah. Well, it comes to exclude the following case. Now, what happens if you're makabel the blood, the kohen is makabel the blood in two different kalim, two different utensils? The problem is, neither one utensil has enough blood for the total hazia, for the total sprinkling. So you received half of the blood in kli 1, half of the blood in kli 2. Well, so listen to this. Now, Rashi actually points out over here, if you look at Rashi, second Rashi from the top of the daf, Rashi says, Kiba pachos mikdei hazia beklizia, the chazer ve'irev. So Rashi says, the case over here is where you then mix the two bloods together. So I just want to point out, not everyone reads or understands this case in this particular way. So in any event, you're going ahead and you're receiving half of the blood in one kli, half of the blood in another kli. The sanya Rabbi Chalafta bar Shol, Omer, because we also listen to this, the sanya we learned in the Braisa, Rabbi Chalafta ben Shol says, kidesh pachos mikdei hazia beklizia. And I will say, now we're switching gears a little bit, because Rabbi Chalafta bar Shol is actually talking about back to Para Aduma. So in the case of Para Aduma, listen to this. Kirish pachos mikdei hazia beklizia. Let's say for argument's sake, you need X amount of water ash combination for the azia, for the sprinkling of Para Aduma. You go ahead and you mix half of that amount in one kli, half of that amount in a second kli. So pachos mikdei hazia beklizia, upachos mikdei hazia beklizia. Lo kirish. Rabbosei, Rabbi Chalafta bar Shol says, doesn't work. In order for sanctification of paradumas to work, you have to have what? You have to have the requisite shear where? All in one kli. All in one kli. So we'll say, so therefore again, we're assuming that the same halacha that applies by paraduma applies by sacrificial blood as well. That in order for the sacrificial blood to have the sanctity of sprinkling blood, and for our purposes, to generate an obligation for kibbutz if it comes in contact with the kli, the full measure of the necessary blood must be in one utensil. Ibailu bedam mahu. So we'll say, what is the halacha when it comes to dam? Look at Rashi. Bedam mai kabichatas hapnimis kiba pachos mikdei hazia v'chazer ve'irev mihavi kabalo. So we'll say Rashi says. So now the Gemara asks. So what about if the kohen goes ahead and is mikabel? He's talking about the chatas hapnimis, the inner chatas. What happens if you received half of the blood of the chatas in one kli, half of the blood of the chatas in another kli? And again, Rashi l'shitasu is saying, I'm mixing them together again. What is the status of that blood? Is that a proper Kabbalah? And therefore, ultimately, again, will this be able to be a proper Zrika? So, Hilchasehi, so do we say ultimately, again, that this is Rabbi Chalafta bar Shol Bosai is actually, he understands, as we're going to see in just a few moments, that the din of Para Aduma is Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. So maybe that's the din of, so by Para Aduma, the Halacha is you have to have the full measure of the mixture in one kli. You can't have it divided up amongst two kelim. Therefore, again, it's Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, and you can't learn out anything from a Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. I can't learn out the law of sacrificial blood from a Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai for by Para Aduma. Maybe we can say as follows. Why is it ultimately, again, by paraduma, that you have to have the full measure of the water in one kli? Because the pasuk says, because the pasuk says, that ultimately, again, v'tava b'mayim, he has to go ahead and, the lashon of the pasuk is, v'lakach ezo v'tava b'mayim. So listen to this. So if you look at Rashi for just a moment, Rashi says, v'tava b'mayim, u'mind karinan b'mayim, v'lo karinan b'mayim. So we'll say, listen to this. So Rashi, the diuk the Gemara is making over here is, b'mayim versus b'mayim. What's the difference between b'mayim and b'mayim? B'mayim means what? In the water. The water means what? All of the necessary water. As opposed to bimayim, could mean in what? In some of the water. So what's like, bimayim tells me that all the water I need for paraduma must be contained within one kli. As opposed to bimayim, which could tell me I can maybe even divide it up amongst multiple kelim. To which the Gemara says, badam. So we'll say ultimately again the pasuk says v'tavala coin es etzba'o badam. So we'll say maybe badam is like what? Bamayim. Just like bamayim teaches me all of the water has to be in one kli. So too badam, all of the blood that is going to be used for sacrificial purposes must be collected in one kli. So we'll say let's analyze this. So tashma derem zikam Rav Elazar. Af bedam lo kiddush. So we'll say, okay, it's pretty easy. So we'll say that even by dam, we'll say if all of the blood was not in one kli, so ultimately, again, it was not kiddush, it was not sanctified as sacrificial blood. Amar Rava Tanya. So Rava says the truth is, we see this in a braisa. What's the braisa? So taval velo vitaval velo mesapik. So we'll say the halacha is ultimately again that when the coin dips, the Torah goes out of its way to say that for zrika, the coin has to immerse his finger. Below misbug. We'll say misbug means wipe. Now what that means is as follows. The coin has to get blood on his hands, quite literally. So we'll say, so the idea is there are two ways to do this. He could just dip his fingers in, right? Or he could like wipe his fingers against the side of the kli. So the Gemara is saying over here that Vitaval teaches me that the coin is supposed to get the blood on his fingers ultimately by immersing his fingers and not by wiping his fingers against the kli. So below misapik, badam, badam, Achiehe badam shir tevila meikaro. Or just excuse me, shir tevila. That ultimately, again, what? So the halacha is badam teaches me, I will say that the full shir necessary for the tevila badam ultimately, again, has to be there from the beginning. In other words, the kli itself must contain the requisite amount of dam necessary for the avodah. Meikaro, minadam, minadam shebe'inyon. So we'll say, listen, I'm sorry, I should say, shir tevila meikaro. Minadam, minadam shebe'inyon. We'll say, listen to this. What does it mean, minadam? What are we dashing from that? Minadam shebe'inyon. Look at Rashi just a moment. It's actually almost right across. Shebe'inyon, Rashi says, midam ha'amar be'inyon, tevila, shehiza mimena rishona, yaz es kulan. So listen to this. What that teaches me is, the blood that is used for the first sprinkling, meaning that's contained in the utensil, must be the same blood that is used for the subsequent sprinkling. But this teaches me an additional halacha. Shetarach lachzer v'litbal bo etzba'o al kol azia tevila l'me'uti shirayim shebe etzba. Rabbi say, listen to this. So min adam teaches me, min adam shebinyin. Rabbi say, that for every sprinkling, the coin has to go back where? He has to go back into the kli and re-immerse his finger. Now what does that come to teach? Rabbi say, this is amazing. What does that come to teach me? You can't use shirayim. So Yabo say, let's say the following case. Let's say the Kohen sprinkles the blood, and it turns out that what? He's still got plenty of blood left on his finger. So I don't have to immerse again. I could just go back and use the leftover blood. No, min adam means that for every act of sprinkling, he must re-immerse his hand into the kli, ultimately again to do another immersion. He can't use the shirayim, he can't use the leftover blood that is on his hands. So we'll say we have to write all these drashas. Why? Because if would have just said v'itzrich l'michtav badam, it has to say badam, because if rachmana v'taval, because if would have just said v'taval, have amina afabid like a shir tvila, meikaro. I would have thought, so we'll say v'taval just means he has to immerse it, but it doesn't. You don't necessarily have to have the full measure of the blood in the kli from the beginning. Therefore, because of rachmana badam, therefore, Bosa, the pasuk says, badam, badam teaches me that what? All of the necessary blood must be in the kli from the beginning. Because of Rahman of Adam, if just said badam, hava minafilo misbug, I might have thought that what? So Bosa, badam just means the kli has to have all of the blood from the beginning. But what? I could even smear my hand against the kli and get the blood like that. Therefore, cause of Rahmana Vitaval. Therefore, the pasuk says Vitaval. Say, what does Vitaval teach me? That you can't smear your hand against the kli. Rather, what do you have to do? You have to immerse your hand and pull it out. Min adam shebe'inyon lemi'utei'mai. Say, what does that come to exclude? Amarava lemi'uti shirayim shebe'etzba. Shabbosei min adam shebeinyan. The fact that it's min adam means from the blood. Shabbosei min adam shebeinyan that we were discussing the entire time. Which means that what? Which means that halacha lemaisa, every single time you have to do a sprinkling, you have to go back into the kli that has the blood. You cannot use the shirayim. You cannot use the leftovers that are on your hand. Mesiyele Rabbi Lazar. We'll say this supports the view of Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar, shirayim shebe'etzu psulim. Rabbi Elazar says, the shirayim, the leftover on the coin fingers, are puzzle. And we'll say, now what does that mean? Well, we'll see what it means. But it means that you have to go back for every subsequent sprinkling into the kli. Amali Rav and Baravad al Rav, Amar Tamitcha. So Rav Ado said, Rav and Baravad said to Rav, your student told me the following. Amar Rav Amram, Tanina, Haya Maze Vinitsa Hazam Miado. Supposed to listen to this. If the coin was sprinkling Vinitsa Hazam Miado, and ultimately again some of it sprinkled on him, so Achelo Hiza, so we'll say before the actual sprinkling took place, Ton Kibus. Ultimately, again, if some of the blood got on his clothing, he's going to require kibus. Mishehiza, but once he sprinkles, in town kibus, ultimately, again, the clothing does not require any kind of laundering. So we'll say, what does this mean? Ma'ilav hachikamar, does it not mean the following? Achelo gamar me'lahazos, town kibus. Maybe what it means is as follows. Achelo gamar me'lahazos, meaning while he's still sprinkling, the hazos is not complete. If it gets on his clothing, town kibus, then the clothing requires laundering. However, mishegamer lahazos in town kibus. But once ultimately again the hazah is over, or it's complete, if blood gets on his clothing, it doesn't require kibus. Lo, that's somebody meant to say. Hachi kamazuri means to say, achelo yotzesa hazah miado town kibus. We'll say, if ultimately the blood gets on his clothing before the hazah was even done, then the clothing will require kibus. Mishe yotzesa hazah miado, but once ultimately again the hazah left his hand, in town kibus, ultimately, again, the clothing will not require any kind of additional kibbutz. But 1 second, Isi Abaye. But Abaye raised the kasha, Gamer Mila Hazos. Once the coin finishes doing the Hazah, Mekaneach Yodo Begufo Shal Parah. So we'll say, this is back by Paraduma. He goes ahead and he wipes his hand on the goof of the Parah. The goof of the cow. Gamer in lo gamar lo. We'll say, so what you see from here is what? That is only true when he finishes the azan. We'll say, remember what we're trying to figure out over here. We're trying to figure out what's the status of shirayim. Can a Kohen use the leftover blood on his hands or not? So the Gemara says over here, if he finished sprinkling, mekaneach yado begufo shapara, he has the ability to go ahead and wipe his hands. Rashi says over here, mekaneach yado begufo shapara, sha'af dama ta'un sreifa, kidiksiv es orava es basarava es tama al pir shah yisrof. So you go ahead, I will say, the paraduma, and after he goes ahead, he's able to wipe his hands on the par. So the Gemara says, lo gamar, if he has not yet finished, mekaneach yado be'etzba'o. Excuse me, mekaneach etzba'o. He goes in, he wipes his finger. So bishlam agamar mekaneach yado begufo shapara, shene'emar v'sarav es habasa es hapara le'inov. So I understand when he finishes, he could wipe his hand on the goof of the parah, because the pasuk says you burn the parah in its entirety. Ela etzbo'o b'may mekaneach. Rabbi said, the finger, what do you go ahead and wipe his finger on? Amar Abaye, b'svas mizrak, because you wipe it on the edge of the bowl. Kidichsiv, or shene'em, I'm sorry, kidichsiv, kapori zav. As the pasuk says, ultimately again, Kippore Izov Shloshim Kippore Kesses, according to the Pasuk over here from Ezra. Shabbos says, so bottom line, halacha lemaisa. So how do we paskin? So remember again, first of all, I'll say, everybody agrees with the principle. Remember, the principle in the Mishnah is uncontested. The principle, I mean, pretty much all of the Mishnah is uncontested. But the principle is the only time that a beggar will require kibos is when it's blood that is fit ultimately for hazah. But if it's not blood fit for hazah, which means, again, it's blood in a kli and fit for sprinkling, which tells me a number of things. If it's not in the kli, can't require the beggar for kibbutz. If it's post-hazah, then ultimately, again, beggar won't require kibbutz. So I'll say, I was intrigued, but what about this last piece? What about this idea of shirayim? What does the kohen do with the leftover blood on his hands? So listen to this. So the Rambam paskins, this is in Maaseh HaKarbonos Parakei Pasuk Ches. Listen to this. V'tzarech litpol etzba al kol keren v'keren. I'll say every single time a kohen does sprinkling, he has to dip his hand. He has to, meaning there has to be vitava. There has to dip his hand before every single sprinkling. Ukishagomra hanasina al karet. Bosa, listen to this. This is just amazing. When he finishes sprinkling the blood on one corner, mikaneach etzbo'o bisvas hamizrach. He wipes his finger on the corner of the utensil, the bowl. Mizrak is the bowl. So remember, he's holding the blood in a bowl. So he goes out, he dips his finger, does a zrika, ultimately again on one corner. Before he does the next zrika, he has to go ahead and wipe his finger off on the corner of the bowl. The achakach, tovel pam shnia. Then I will say what happens. Then he goes ahead and is tovel his finger a second time. Sheshiyare hadam she'etz bo'o psulin lite mehen al karen acheres. Because Rabbi said the shirayim, right, the leftover blood after one act of sprinkling is possible ultimately again for the subsequent sprinkling. So Rabbi said that's how the Rambam paskins. Now I do want to point out, if you notice again, even though shirayim is possible, the coin is not obligated to what? See, you would have thought if shirayim was really possible, then what? You know, wash it down. No, that he doesn't have to do. The idea is he has to just take off whatever is the, I guess the blood that is. The right term for this. He has to be able to remove any kind of blood, sprayable blood, sprinkleable blood. So the idea is, if he rubs his finger across the edge of the against the edge of the bowl, ultimately that'll take off at least the larger droplets. So even though there's going to be blood left on his hands, there's no sprinkleable blood left. Right. So we'll say that's how the Rambam paskins. I'm sorry. Yeah. So interestingly enough. No, because the way that the Kesef Mishnah understands this, that he's actually scraping his finger on the outside of the kli, so that it trickles down back the other side, and whatever's going to trickle down will go by the yisod. That's how the Kesef Mishnah understands it. I saw that. I wasn't eyeing into this too much, but I saw others seem to say, no, he actually wipes it down into the inside of the bowl, because shirayim ultimately again will passel the next taziah, but shirayim doesn't passel the rest of the blood. So that's how the Rambam paskins. They both say, we'll have to stop over here for today. I'm going to leave you at the Mishnah. Amir Tzashem, pick up with the Mishnah tomorrow. Shkoyach.
Rabbi, again, we did 4 volunteers, so each one take 5 terry clothes and wash.